Greetings and welcome to Catholic Cardinal Reflections, the regular podcast of the Catholic community at Stanford University. This is a weekly podcast of Sunday homilies and theological reflections given by the staff of the Catholic community and their guests. Today's speaker is Father Nathan Castle, OP, pastor and director of the Catholic community. It is the 32nd Sunday in Ordinary Time, and the readings are from Cycle C.
I've gone months without being on a plane until the last couple of weeks, back-to-back trips. I followed the football team up to Oregon State 2 weeks ago, and then went to St. Cloud, Minnesota last weekend and gave a retreat at the Catholic Campus Ministry at St. Cloud State. I'm beginning to like being on planes now that many of the planes you get on have Wi-Fi. Because that time that feels kind of wasted on a plane, at least for me, now it becomes productive time and really kind of hyper-productive time because I can grind through that inbox. I don't know what your life is like, but just my life here at Stanford, some of it's doing stuff like this, you know, scheduled public worship things. Then there's different kinds of meetings to make everything operate, and then counseling appointments. And while all those things are going on, the inbox isn't being tended. And eventually you have to handle all that stuff that's coming in, like people wanting a next appointment or whatever. I can just grind on that when I'm on a plane. And I was doing that on the way into the airport at Minneapolis-St. Paul. And then suddenly, the emails wouldn't leave, and I couldn't get on a site, and I'm getting this message, "You are no longer on the internet." You know why? Because we went under 10,000 feet, and it stops. And then some disembodied voice from the front of the plane comes on and says, "We are beginning our gradual descent." We're beginning our gradual descent. If you think about life as a journey, and maybe a journey on a plane, at some point, we begin our gradual descent. This is week 32 out of 34. So it's not accidental that the themes that occur in this set of readings are about the end of things. We only have two more weeks before the end of the liturgical year, and then we start another one. This one ends, and the other one takes off. So today, we have Jesus near the end of his life, going to the temple, and what's presented? End-of-life issues. Unfortunately, for something so important, it gets brought up, as I mentioned at the beginning of Mass, in a controversial way where there's really not much opportunity for heart to meet heart, mind to meet mind. It's people defending turf. We're told at the very beginning of the passage that Jesus was approached by some Sadducees who believe there is no resurrection. It's like it may as well be one long word. Sadducees who believe there is no resurrection because they're really ideologues. They're a small group, but they're very powerful. They're aristocratic. They're very connected to the temple. And their particular brand of Judaism, okay, it's a minority part of a much larger Jewish world, but their particular slant was if it wasn't spelled out in the first five books of what we call the Old Testament, if it wasn't in the Pentateuch, the books that Moses is attributed to having written, then it doesn't count. That makes it takes away all of the wisdom literature and all of the prophets, and reduces even Judaism to this one narrow little band. But that's often the way ideology works. You don't need to have an expansive worldview to be an ideologue, do you? You just need to have the truth, and it can be in a tiny little compact package. In fact, it's even more convenient to be ideological if you have a very small range of thought. That's not a recent invention. So Jesus is encountered by ideologues who are well-positioned, and they know their turf. They also don't like the fact that Jesus approaches them. Wherever Jesus went, he didn't go alone. You came with him. And all your dirty little friends. All these ragamuffin people that usually knew their place and didn't get uppity. Except Jesus just seemed to embolden them. All these people who were used to understanding that it was okay to beg over here, but don't come over here, came with them. So you weren't just talking to Jesus, but you were talking to this whole rabble around him. But okay, he's on our turf, and so they say to him, "Jesus, teacher, let's talk. I understand that you are a believer in the resurrection. Well, I have a story for you. There was this woman with a husband." You heard the whole thing. I don't need to recount it. It's a ridiculous story, and it's meant to ridicule the point of view of Jesus, who disagrees with them about the survival of consciousness after our deaths. Well, she married this one, that one, the other one. Bum, 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 7 different guys. Nobody could raise up a son, a child. Now, in that culture, the whole point of marrying at all had nothing to do with romance. It was all about raising up offspring to perpetuate the clan, the tribe, the family. So marrying and not having kids is kind of a waste of time. So this whole woman's life is wasted, and all of these brothers, all in a row, and then they all died. Then we're presented with this ridiculous scene. Okay, in this resurrection of yours, so who's she going to be married to? Remember, 7 married her. It's at that point that I would ask, where's the ideologue in you? Where are you so sure of your point of view that there's no need for you to listen to anybody else? Where your opinions are so rock solid, firm, that there's no reason for you to listen to any reasoned argument from anyone else because your mind is made up. It's ugly enough when you see that in older people. When you see it in people the age of many of you, it's even worse. That's a question for all of us. Because searching for it, sometimes we can use the word truth to excuse it. But I have the truth, and behind me is the tradition of the truth, and so on. Well, good for you. Except that the truth has to be received humbly. And it doesn't sit on a shelf and just not change, because the universe changes. And the Spirit's alive, and so are all of us. Possessing the truth always involves asking the next person, for what part of the truth can you teach me that I don't have yet? Or what part of the truth that I think is true might have changed since the last time I looked? I sometimes think of it in terms of personal relationships. I did another wedding here yesterday. And people had better have discerned that they're marrying someone worthy of giving their life away to. They think they know the truth of this other person, that she'll be faithful to me. He will be able to follow that vow that he just promised me and be with me in good times and bad, sickness and health, death do us part. But you also know that that person is going to change. You better know that, because they will. Because we all have a core in us that's stable, but we're all alive and changeable. Both of those at the same time, stable and changeable, known and unknown. That's the truth. Well, back to this story. Jesus is dealt with so disrespectfully, it amazes me that he doesn't get all defensive. Have you had people approach you the way that Jesus is approached in this story? And where your beliefs are ridiculed and you kind of get that that's what's going on here? And get offended. And then what happens after you get offended and it's, now it's your turn to talk? Well, you might come across with some anger, or you might even say how offended you are and then defend your point of view so that there's really no conversation happening, where now it is just controversy. It happens to be your turn to talk, but all you're going to do now is spout off. I've done that, and I go to Jesus sometimes and say, "Boss, give me some of that. I want that kind of peace that you have, that you can continue to be a teacher to a disciple." This started with Jesus trying to be a teacher, but you can only teach a person who wants to learn. I want to be the one that keeps learning. And I want to be able to stand my ground and speak peacefully when somebody comes at me in that tone that they did with Jesus. I can't do that on my own. That needs to be a grace that comes from the Lord. Anyway, he just says, let me quote him correctly. "Those who belong to this age marry and are given in marriage, but those who are considered worthy of a place in that age and in the resurrection of the dead, they don't need to marry." And you know why? Because they don't die anymore. You don't have to put such a great big priority on making sure that you produce the next generation when you're sure that you're going to die out. That becomes not quite the imperative that you think it is when you understand that you're going to survive your passing. Then, as now that I've established that Jesus is being very large of heart and very patient, then he gets a little needle in, I think. They can't die anymore because, you know why? They're like the angels. The Sadducees hate the idea of angels. They don't believe in them. But Jesus says, they're like the angels. They're like the angels. They're children of God, being children of the resurrection. And then he goes on to the heart of their turf, the books of Moses that they stake their entire ideology on. And you know what? The fact that the dead are raised, Moses himself showed that in the story about the bush. Remember? Remember when he speaks of the Lord as the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob? All the verbs are present tense. Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, he doesn't say they were, they are. They were dead when Moses wrote about them. But they're alive because of the resurrection, because death is survivable. He's not the God of the dead, but of the living. For him, they're all alive, the word of the Lord. I have a friend who has a gift. Are any of you the person in your circle of friends that is always the one that somebody in trouble seeks out to talk to? Those of you that are living in residence halls, you know what that's like, don't you? There's always this one room that's kind of the doctor is in, you know? The place where has the big shoulder to cry on. This particular person I have in mind isn't so much the counselor as she is the person who's very gifted when someone is near the end of their life. When in a circle of friends, somebody has cancer or somebody has something that's signaling that their time here is short. And when that happens, sometimes people back away because they don't know what to say, or it frightens them, but they're just creeped out and just back off and get silent. The person I have in mind, she walks right into those circumstances. And she knows what to do. And she knows how to organize other people. And she knows how to sit still and listen to a person who is in their last days. When somebody is near death, you know what she calls it? the departure lounge. She's in the departure lounge. Yeah, he's in the departure lounge. Airport metaphor. She's about to take off. You can tell. It won't be long before her plane's leaving because she's going on an adventure. That idea of we're making our gradual descent, I've already spoken at two masses today, and the other two have a whole lot more older people than this mass does. I'm 58. Am I middle-aged at 58? Do the math. I'm middle-aged if I live to be 116. Otherwise, no. At 58, I'm probably making my gradual descent. So far, I'm not worried about breaking a hip, finding my keys, remembering my name, but I'm making my gradual descent. And a lot of people are closer to descending than I am. Wouldn't it be sad if you just thought the best that you could hope to do was to stay upright, you know, or to remember who you are until you get all the way down? To me, that would be life without the hope of the resurrection, the belief in the resurrection. But then, even if you do make the gradual descent, on the way into Minneapolis, the airport was too congested, and they told us we had to slow down and stay in the air longer. All right, I can do that. But eventually, I want to land. And when I do, I'm probably going to either do one of two things. I'm going to be with new people and have great adventures, as I did in Minnesota, where I didn't know any of these folks. Or on the way back here, I got to land in a place where I was full of reunions. Happy to be back home with people I love. To me, I think of the resurrection like that. Yes, there are moments on a trip when a part of it ends, and you land, and you're there, and it's over. But then as soon as it's over, something else starts up. Another adventure, an ascent. Maybe the trip involves more than one part of a flight. And then you ascend again. As we end this liturgical year, that's, I think, the thought that we're to carry with us. Are we people that can embody the hope of the resurrection, share it with those around us, many of whom have been kind of bought into an ideology that's very prevalent around here on our campus of a kind of scientific materialism that simply mocks, without proof, that it's right and that there could not be any such thing. It's just silly to believe that we survive our deaths. Maybe not. We could be people, though, who simply embody that hope, that belief. So as we move into the rest of this celebration, we receive into us the risen one, who, when he, like that guy in the first reading, God bless you, that said near the end, you know, the fourth, right at the end of that first reading, the last one says to the executioner guy, you're not going to get to be resurrected, says, how does he put it? There'll be no resurrection to life for you. We follow the one who went to the cross. Do you remember the last two things that he said to the guy who had the hammer still in his hand? Father, forgive him. I want him to come along too. Forgive him. I don't want him to be left behind. And then to the guy on his right, the criminal guy, today, you'll be with me in paradise. Come along. We're simply invited to be that broad of heart, that inclusive. Leave behind all of our narrow little orthodoxies, all of our tiny little ideologies, and embrace the entire universe in Christ's name. Are you up for it? I want to be.
This has been a presentation of Catholic Cardinal Reflections, the regular podcast of the Catholic community at Stanford University. Director Gary Glover, Associate Director Nancy, with music by Albert Tommaso and Shane Clarkson. For more information, please visit our website at catholic.stanford.edu or visit our offices on the third floor of Old Union. Till next time, God bless you.